Hi everyone, it's Thomas here, and this is another episode of the Something Beautiful podcast. Both JD and Stuart are otherwise engaged, which means that, well, it sounds like they're in the toilet really. You know, that's kind of what you say when somebody phones and the person they're looking for is on the toilet, but that, I can't say whether they're on the toilet or not, but you know, both JD and Stuart can make it. So just a quick rap from me. I'm not the best rapper in the world. I'm like Vanilla Ice compared to the, you know, the iced tea and the ice cube that is Stuart and JD. But yeah, just a couple of things. You know, you're about to hear hear from a fantastic guy called Pernell Goodyear. He's a dear friend of mine. He's one of the folks I really want to meet up with physically, you know, and just shake him by the hand, because he's just such an inspiration for me. And I hope that in the conversation that we had, that comes over, that, you know, that he is a truly top guy. And I hope that his story has been of inspiration and of worth to you, that, you know, to folks listening. So that's what you're about to hear. But before you hear it, I just wanted to say, look, you know, Haiti's still happening. So there's links on the website, www.somethingbeautifulpodcast.com. There's links there that if you want to donate, if you've got some spare cash that you want to give to the relief efforts, then hey, please do so. But also give your time in prayer. Get on your knees, pray for Haiti. Pray for the people there that have been so affected. They have nothing, and this, you know, even their nothing has been taken away from them. So please pray, sincerely pray for Haiti. Pray for those workers that are there. Pray for the folks, you know, whatever they're doing that are out there, that are, you know, pray for them. JD gave me a. Or sent me a link, I think it was through Twitter, that it was a story from Mark Driscoll, and he was telling a story of how he had witnessed a translator buying a young girl for sex, and I just, is mind-bogglingly crazy. So please, pray for folk like Mark Driscoll that are shining the light in this really dark place. And think of all the various aid efforts that are there, and think of the work of, you know, organisations that are really close to my heart, like the Salvation Army. You know, pray for all the efforts that are going on there, and sincerely pray. Get on your knees and pray for Haiti. And when you're down there, please, there are members of the Something Beautiful community that are hurting. They're having really dark days. I don't want to name names, but please, be aware of the folks around you. Be aware of the folks that are in this real, you know, this real community that we have here. Please be aware and reach out. You know, reach out in prayer. Prayer is not some sort of wishy-washy activity. It has real, prayer has real power. And I'm not talking about the noetic stuff that Dan Brown talks about in his latest book. It's more than that. Prayer and believing can move mountains. So please, collectively as a community, let's reach out to those that are having dark times and be a help to them. Pray for them. And let's see if we can, you know, just keep each other for his sake. So yeah, without further ado, without any more ramblings from me, I'm going to, you know, segue into the next part of my conversation with a dear friend, and you know, I feel like a complete fanboy, but yeah, Pernell. So without any further ado, here's Pernell. You know, a question for you. Can you walk to the freeway from your house?
Oh yeah, I'm 10 blocks from the freeway.
So, or to be honest, if you look at your Flickr page, you could probably skateboard to the freeway from your house.
I often do. And actually, like, I'm looking out my back window right now in my home office, and I can see houses of people who are part of the freeway too. Like, we live literally right here within. We can throw rocks at each other. How's that?
Well, you do whatever you want, but if it goes, you might not.
We're more aggressive than people think.
Yeah, we have things called email and you know, the telephone if we want to contact people. We've stopped throwing stones at each other to get their attention.
Oh, Thomas, don't worry. I know all about your culture because I've seen So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Hot
heat, move it now!
Hot heat, move it now!
In fact, earlier you said gargantuan and I started to laugh because that's all I could think of. His head's gargantuan, look at it. It's pointy in parts.
I said, oh, I went too far that time. He'll be sobbing in his pillow the night. Oh.
With this huge pillow, yeah, I know. It's true. I do about as good a Scottish accent as you probably do Canadian. So,
well, I wouldn't encourage me there because I do like to do the accents. I'm quite good at yeah. Canadian's not the one that I've got down yet. But what was that, Pernell? Eh?
Eh? I know I say that a lot.
No,
I say a boot.
A boot, yes, a boot. A boot is what you put on your foot.
But listen, since we're talking a friendship and connection, by the way, my ancestry is Scottish. I don't know if you know that.
Well, see, the one thing is that most people in North America, notice how I said North America, not just America or Canada, yes. North America, getting it being politically correct, will claim some form of Scottish ancestry. I think it's a proven percentage that if everybody that claimed to be of Scotland were actually from Scotland, Scotland would probably be about the size of America just now. But so tell me your story about your Scottish ancestry.
Well, I don't know too much about it. I just know that, like, my family, my extended family, and my parents and beyond were from Newfoundland, and Newfoundland only joined Canada in 1949.
Mm-hmm.
But they came from generally the British Isles, Scotland, England, and they settled in Newfoundland somewhere around 1900.
Wow.
So.
That's awesome. I mean, and I think I unfortunately have, I think I've got a wee bit of Irish blood in me way back, but I think that's about it. You know, I'm very boringly Scottish, but, you know, it'd be nice to have some sort of, you know, some sort of ancestry like that, so that, you know, it's also nice to know that they came from Scotland, went to England, couldn't hack it, so they went to the other side of the world kind of thing, rather than stay in England, which is brilliant, you know?
Right, nice.
I've just alienated all the English listeners now as well, but...
Yeah.
So coming back, because that's the problem with me, I'm like Billy Connolly, I go off in way big tangents,
yes,
and then I come back to
that. That's my attention deficit disorder, man.
Yeah, it's just me being me. But the thing is, okay, so you let's talk about the life before you go to, you know, you talked about theatre school, going to to Bible College, to seminary. What was life before that? Like, what were you before you went to college? You know, what was, you know, things like, you know, how you were, your parents Salvationists? Did you come up? Were you brought up in a Christian home? You know. Did you have any sort of early experiences with God? What, you know, tell me about your early life.
I don't want to put too much personal stuff on the internet, deeply personal.
Okay.
But I did grow up in a Salvation Army home. My parents were actually Salvation Army officers. But I would say in a nutshell that my roots and my upbringing weren't necessarily the form of Christianity that I practice today. How's that?
I would get that.
So I have always been a little bit of a black sheep, a rebel. I've always had a hard time fitting into institutional requirements, both in family and in work and in church. And basically, I've always wanted to buck and do my own thing. And I've come to realize as I've gotten older that it's not a rebellion against anything that is not is not like me, but more is a dissatisfaction with the way things are, particularly with they're not reflective of the actual kingdom.
So
I get frustrated very easily when it comes to things that feel like they're not the way that they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I guess I came to a point in my life where I had two choices. I could walk away from that institutional piece of both Christianity and the Salvation Army, or I could actually decide to be a mover and shaker as opposed to a complainer.
Mm.
And I chose that, and I don't regret that. And I would say it has helped kind of define who I am. I'm well aware that there are many people, maybe some of whom are listening to this podcast, that don't like my particular flavor, don't like my particular style or personality, or Salvation Army people especially who don't like what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And basically I would say, okay, but I'm going to keep being who I think I'm supposed to be.
Amen, my brother, amen. I'm
very open to the leading of the Spirit, to discerning who Jesus is and what he's about and what he wants. And I will hopefully continue in my life to come under his authority to change and to be transformed. My assumption is there isn't an inch, a centimeter of this entire planet that Jesus doesn't already say, that's mine.
Yeah.
And he wants to redeem and transform everything, and I believe that he means me to.
Yes.
And for me, that means there is no sacred things. There are no things that should be left untouched. I think, you know, the things that we participate in feel like what we're doing is we're helping to bring the redemption, the transformation of Jesus to places that other churches, other people are sometimes unwilling to do.
Yeah.
And for that, I don't apologize.
No, and neither you should. And I think the thing is that you're saying about there may be people that just don't agree with you. Well, I know for a fact that the core group of listeners, you know, because we've built up a listening community around the Something Beautiful podcast, and I know that there's a number of people that listen because of my involvement who connect with me because of the fact that they see similarities in my experience with their experience, the fact that they're dissatisfied because the army could be so much better, that they're dissatisfied because, you know, our expression of you know, church in general is, you know, is different from what they want to see, that they want to see, you know, they want to be insurgents of love that bring God's kingdom, you know, here and now, you know, your kingdom come. And the thing is, you know, people like Johnny Laird and Alex Thompson and you know, Dan Roos, and, you know, they're all like-minded people that hold the army as, you know, the army as being of something of value, but just it isn't what it should be. You know, our understanding of church, our understanding of our expression of church, how we're living out Jesus, you know, corporately isn't how it should be. So, you know, the one thing to mind, the one thing to take from this podcast is, look, you know, we're interested in your story, we're interested in your experience because you are amongst friends here, because, you know, but the thing is what, you know, the stuff that you're doing in Freeway is just, you know, I want to say revolutionary now, but I don't want it to be like that, because one of the things I worry about, and, you know, I've spoken to a number of the key, you know, we've on the podcast, we've spoken to a number of the key players, and shall we say, in this sort of, you know, the sort of new expressions of church that are emerging all over the you know, pretty much the West at the moment. You know, and you look at Andrew Jones, Tall Skinny Kiwi, Mark Berry, I've spoken to Johnny Baker, and you look at all these different characters, and the thing that they have in common is that they have this deep love for Jesus, but they have this pioneering spirit, that they have this entrepreneurial, let's go out and do something. And to be fair, they have permission, they have they're empowered by their denominations or whoever to go out and be missionaries and to, you know, in the true sense of what a missionary is. And the thing that worries me in that sort of today is that instead of me capturing my imagination and me being me and expressing my faith and my Jesus and all these things as me, which, you know, instead what I do is I look at Pernell, I look at you and I think, you know, that's really cool what I'll do. Let's go and open up a coffee shop, regardless of the content. You know, that there's this, you know, that people are almost following the leaders rather than being leaders in their own right. And that is one of the things that does worry me about sort of what's happening just now. And, you know, you mentioned about folks phoning you up and asking, you know, it's almost as if you have the golden ticket, that you are the
secret anecdote that they can take.
Yes.
Yeah. The thing is, I'm always leery to be perceived as pioneering, in the sense that what we're doing at the freeway is simply common sense. Mm-hmm. And even more than that, is simply the story of a bunch of people who feel like for me, I look and I say, and I usually say this at the beginning of things when I talk, so I should have said this at the beginning of the podcast, in case there's any doubt, I completely and totally love Jesus. I would do anything for Jesus. I want to be like Jesus. I'm part of the Salvation Army. I'm at the freeway. I live where I do, and I work where I do, and I do what I try to do out of an absolute love for Jesus. I recognize that he changed everything for me, you know?
Yeah.
And I want to live out of that place. I don't want to be bound by the junk that tends to distract us. Which is why for me, for those who are listening, who are actually part of the Salvation Army, it's like we have an opportunity to recreate who we are and what our identity is. Our mission comes out of a calling from Jesus, and we have to stop sitting around and complaining about the way things are or the way things are going or the way that they used to be, and we have to start living the kind of thing that we want to see happen. Does that make sense?
Oh, completely, completely.
Because the reality is, I when I started to plant this church, I didn't want to do it. Like I told you, I don't really feel like I'm a called pastor. I mean, I've never become a Salvation Army officer for various reasons, but part of it is that. I simply feel like I'm responding to what I have to do, because I have this sense that it's sort of like if I didn't move to this neighborhood and start a new church and to be the Salvation Army presence in downtown Hamilton – what am I waiting for? Who's going to do it?
Yeah.
I can do it, so I will do it. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes.
And I think that's the thing. It's really easy for us to get discouraged as we look around. It's really easy for us, not just in terms of looking at the Salvation Army and what we've become, but even in looking at the world around us, you know, the neighborhood that I live in. It would be so easy for me to look around and feel completely defeated and completely discouraged. And sometimes I do feel that way. You know, I feel like, man, I work so hard and I try so hard and it seems to make very little difference. But here's the thing. Jesus makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
Right? And for me, I'm simply trying to respond to what he's done for me and trying to respond to what I see. And he keeps showing up. So I'll keep doing this thing.
You awesome. Know,
like everywhere I turn, I see him. It's like I can't shake him. It's like the
Jesus the stalker.
It's like he stalks me everywhere. It's like he's sitting in the trees waiting to shoot me with arrows, right? And he's like, you know, he follows me around all the time, and I cannot shake the notion that he has something for us to do and to be part of that's going to change everything. And I want to keep trying to be part of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is if you're in some way part of changing one life, then it's been all worth it. You know what I mean? And the thing is it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality, it's about the depth, it's about, you know, these are the kind of things, it's when we are involved in people's lives that it counts. Just as Jesus, you know, I saying that I heard on Twitter recently was Jesus wasn't big on Twitter, he only had 12 followers, but look at what he managed, you know what I mean? let's face it, Jesus, 12 followers when he was living, you know what I mean? It's not like he was a big Twitter superstar. But the point is that, you know, it's about being authentically us in the communities that we are in, and being, you know, I think the world needs an alternative view of Jesus. And what I mean by that is that we need a view of Jesus that is more honest and more, you know, this idea, you know, I think sometimes we look at church as being like a car garage, a car showroom, and it's all full of brand new spanking, brand new Mercs and BMWs and all these kind of really shiny, perfect things. And that's not what a church should be. A church should be the kind of garage where things are on show, but they're broken and they've been fixed and they're just not quite perfect. They're a bit old and a bit of a banger, but they, you know, they work because they've been fixed. And who is it that fixes us? Is Jesus. And, you know, I think the thing is that we sometimes put we overemphasize things. We try to analyze and put into words and to make into models and make into practices all these sort of things. But the thing is, at the end of the day, is that people want a simple, you know, want simple faith. They just want to understand that Jesus loves them and that you love them too, and that, you know, they don't want all the complexity of how we've made church, how we've made Jesus, you know, and how it's become so middle class. And, you know, it pains me to think of the Salvation Army moving out of the neighbourhood, you know what I mean? Because at the same time, and certainly in the Advent season as we look towards Christmas, what does John say? You know, the Word became flesh and moved into the neighborhood. You know,
yeah, absolutely. Well, and even, I mean, from the forget about even just the, like, since the time of Jesus, since the beginning of the earth, we've been earthed people, right? We were created from the dust of the ground. We were created in context, and we were created to be part of a context. Not to recreate a new context that's like, you know, like the other one, but not done as well.
Yeah.
And when you talk about, you know, people need to see the real Jesus, they need to see a new perspective of Jesus.
Yes.
The reality is we've been shouting about Jesus for a long time and shouting answers to questions people weren't even asking. All the while, all they really long for is community. People at the freeway who hang out there, they don't care who Purnell is in terms of, you know, world famous, quite a big deal. They don't care about emerging or missional or any of the talk. They could care less about my theology. All they really care about is there somebody who cares about them?
Yeah.
Does their life even mean anything? Does it make any sense? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. That there's somebody there that recognizes them. There's somebody there that, you know, would miss them if they weren't there. There's somebody there that knows their name or knows what they drink, or, you know, these are the sort of that real sort of deep sense of just familiarity that, you know, that people, you know, because I'm the exact same. You know, that's what I'm saying about missing borders, is because, you know, there was a sense of that familiarity in that. And for me, it was a meaningful thing. It was a meaningful learning exercise. But people don't want to know dogma or so dogmatic theology and systematic and all these fancy words for things. They just want to know that they're neat, you know, that they're created in the image of God, and that they're needed and they're valued and they're wanted, and they're, yep, you know, that they mean, the fact is that they mean something, that life wouldn't be the same if they weren't there. And I think, yep,
reality is that's even the meaning of life. The reality is we were created for community from the very beginning, right? God not only shows himself in community, but calls us into community. That's what it's all, that's the entire message of the gospel. Come and learn how to be in healthy community with God and with other people. And when Jesus is asked even, you know, what's the most important thing we can do? He can't even tell them one thing, because he says there's two and they're linked. You can't get away from one or the other.
Yeah.
The first one is love God with everything you have. And the second one is love your neighbor. I mean, it couldn't be more blatant. The entire message of the gospel is
Be in community with people. Learn how to love people, and through doing that, you learn how to love God. Yeah. That's what it's about. Jesus came to show us that's exactly what it's about. And that means that people can't be interested in, you know, the freeway or the coffee house because it sounds cool or sounds like something they want to do. What they can be interested in is, how do I live in my neighborhood and actually build deep community with people who are there so that they might come and be there and receive healing and love and grace and all the things that Jesus promises to those who follow him. Like, how is it that we can actually set up shop in neighborhoods all over the Western world where we say we're going to create the space, the climate, the whatever the word is, in order that people might know that they matter, that they can be in community, you know?
Mm.
Because the whole thing is, people often kind of romanticize the idea of community and say, oh, that'd be so great if I had deep community. Well, let me burst the bubble. It's hard. Mm. It's messy. It sucks most of the time. We were talking about this the other night in our leadership group. It's like, when I get hurt by somebody at the freeway, man, it hurts so much. Why? Because I'm in community with these people. I'm in love with these people, and they're guaranteed to mess up. And same thing when I hurt them. It hurts more. It's harder to get through those kind of conflicts, those kind of broken relationships, because it's deeper community. It's a mess, but it's still the way it has to be.
Yeah.
You know? It's still the way that we were meant to live was in deep community. So why try to fight it and go against it? Why move to the suburbs and build a nice big house with a big garage and drive everywhere I go and try not to get to know anyone and isolate myself believing that my spouse and my job are enough to make me feel fulfilled? The reality is, from the beginning of time, that's never been enough. We were made to be in community with God and with other people. So we may as well just get used to it and try to figure out what that means and how it looks.
Yeah.
No?
No, I completely agree. You're just, my brain's firing with ideas and stuff like that, and I don't think I'm making any more sense, you know what I mean? And I don't think I could make any more sense of that than what you've just said, you know? It's just exactly how it should be, you know? I think sometimes we look at loving God to the exclusion of loving our neighbor, or loving our neighbor to the exclusion of loving God. And, you know, the fact that they are so interlinked, that it's almost like a two, you know, as you say, it's not one, it's two things that we need to do. You know, yeah. It's just, it is all about that sort of deep, because at the end of the day, I'd rather have deep community and be hurt than have superficial community and feel empty. And that is the case. And I think for me, it's trying to coax and trying to encourage and trying to drag people. Not drag, because that seems unwilling, but, you know, just help to people to see that there is an alternative perspective, that see that there is other ways of doing what we do, that it shouldn't be about, you know, the emphasis being on the music, or the emphasis being on what we look like, or the emphasis being on all these sort of things, which quite rightly I rebel as much as you rebel as against. It should be back to this idea that, you know, the Salvation Army's motto of hand to God and heart to man, right. And that is, you know, that is in essence the, you know, almost like a paraphrasing of, yeah, the love God, love your neighbour, is if we give her, you know, our heart to God, and we give our hand, we help, physically help our fellow man. Well, that's us living out those commandments, and in essence, fulfilling the law as the Lord Himself had said. So,
well, even when, you know, in Matthew, when Jesus says, you know, every time you give a cup of cold water to someone in need who's thirsty, give it to me.
Yes.
Every time you visit someone who's lonely, you're doing that to me, for me. It's like, we can't escape the fact that every time we do anything that isn't in terms of being in community, of being vulnerable with people, of offering ourselves to them, whatever that is, whether it's a practical thing or an emotional thing or whatever, it's like we actually join with God on that. Do you know what I mean? It's,
yes,
like we We have community with God. He's not interested in us in having cooler services or in, you know, getting rid of this thing or that thing in our church. What he's really interested in is us actually living our lives for him.
Yeah.
Therefore, I would say, and I say this all the time to churches and people who call, like, who cares what style your church is? That's not the thing you should be concerned about changing. The first thing you should change is, are we a community of followers of Jesus who are actually living our lives with real people who need us?
Yes.
If we are, bring on the brass instruments. I don't really care.
Yeah,
I'm playing it, and I might have to ear muff myself occasionally because I don't really like it. But it's not about what I like.
Yeah.
It's about the community of God actually acting like that and going out of our way, bending over backwards to be in community with people, to offer them hope, to offer them the things that they need. That's, again, why I love the essence of the Salvation Army. I love it.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it. It is Jesus-y. It's as Jesus-y as you can get.
Not Christianese, it's Jesus-y. Yeah. Yes, as you can tell from this podcast episode, we have expanded the English language in so many ways. And
I'm here to give you new words.
New Words is something beautiful podcast. The Oxford English Dictionary will have as its word for 2010, Jesus-y.
It's true, though. It's like, that's exactly it.
Yes.
I think the church is not just the Salvation Army, but the church in general. I would say we've really lost touch with who Jesus is and what he's about. We have to make Jesus our reference point again for how we live. We have to get back to a place where for us it's about we filter everything through Jesus. That's the only way for me, even in our reading of Scripture. How does the Old Testament make any sense? Well, it doesn't. Unless I read it through the eyes of, the context of, through the reference point of who Jesus is, what Jesus did, and what Jesus is doing.
Yeah.
It's the only way it makes sense to me.
To be fair, I would completely agree with that. I think that when you look at some of the really hard passages in the Old Testament, or you look at some of the Levitical laws or something like that, you try to understand that. Well, we've got to try to filter it through what the Lord did and what he said. And, you know, and I think that's extremely important. And I think we need to get back to centering our lives around Jesus and not... Yep. Centering our lives around the issues, not centering our lives around, you know, defending the faith. Because the last time I checked, the creator of the universe doesn't need me to defend him. The creator of the universe wants me to live for him, and in living for him, shining my light for him. You know, I get so messed up when I see all these apologetics and all this kind of nonsense, and I just think, do you know, some things just aren't worth arguing about. And, you know, if you believe this, you believe that, well, hey, so what? At the end of the day, you know, I'm like Joshua, it says, you know, as for me and my household, you know, we'll follow the Lord, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. As I recall the story of the last guy who tried to defend Jesus and cut the ear off one of the guys who tried to arrest him, it didn't turn out all that well for him.
Yes.
Before about... you know, this growing, this big thing and the mega church and all that stuff. Well, it's interesting if we make Jesus our reference point, what happens? Because as I recall, at the end of his life, his family had abandoned him, all his friends had left him, all 12 of them or whatever he had, and he actually suffered and died by himself. But, you know, it sounds like a really great church growth program. You know, come... We've said this actually at the Freeway, and again, we don't say it jokingly. We say, come to the Freeway for a year and get your butt kicked.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, if you're still standing, maybe you'll be able to make more sense of your life. Everyone in the New Testament, every single person who was called by Jesus was called to suffering, not to prosperity and blessing, but to come and pick up our cross and suffer for the cause of Christ. Like, that is it. That is exactly what we're supposed to do. We are supposed to live our lives for others to such a degree that Jesus says, you know, you will actually do greater things than I have done.
Mm.
Right? You will carry on what I have started, what I've begun, And you won't do it because you're great or smart or that you have the intellectual and theological prowess to convince people I'm real. You'll do it because of the way that you live your life. You'll do it because you will be part of love. You will learn what community is really all about, and you'll give yourself to other people in that same way.
Yeah.
And for me, that's it. People often say things like, how could you move your family, your young kids into a neighborhood like yours? Well, two reasons. One, because when Jesus says lose your life if you want to find it, I actually think he means my kids too. Secondly, if there's a choice to be made between physical safety, prosperity, and making a name and getting ahead in this world, or what Jesus offers me, guess which one I'm going to choose?
Yeah.
I choose that for me, and I choose that for my family. We will follow Jesus. You know, as much as I'm responsible for that, I love Jesus and I'll do anything for him. And it seems to me that the more I follow him, sometimes the harder my circumstances become. I'd like to tell you that the last 8 years have been a really great ride and lots of fun and no pain and no suffering and no attacks of the enemy who would love nothing more for me to pack up and leave. But the reality is, Jesus never promised me a hunky-dory life. He just promised me that he'd be with me.
He
would never leave me, and that I could do the work that he is going to do too. I could be part of what he's about. I could join him in what he's already doing anyway.
Yeah.
And it seems to me like not much of a choice, you know? I have to do it.
Yeah, no, and that's one of the things that comes over from talking to you is this sense that you have to do it, that you have to be there, that you have to be part of this. And that for me is really, again, is really inspirational, you know. But I think the thing is when you talk about suffering, you know, you've obviously experienced some, you know, suffering in your life. And I remember one time there was a comment on your blog and just people being really nasty to you. And yeah, and I think I just sort of joined in, as the good Scottish Glaswegian phrase said, I joined in, jumped in to gie you honours. Right. And the thing is, you know, I think you taught me a new curse word there about sort of turd monkeys or something like that. I can't remember if I used it or you used it, but I loved, you know, you were referring to the guy as a turd monkey. But the thing is you obviously suffer for, you know, in that sense, and these sort of attacks from inside the church is just so unfortunate. And I know, you know, I look at Adele Sackler and the sort of stuff that she's doing and the LGBTL, every time I say that, the anacronym for the gay and lesbian, it always sounds like some sort of gay sandwich. You know, the gay BLT. I can never get it quite right. You know what I mean? It's just, I've never tried to imagine what a gay bacon, lettuce and tomato sandwich would look like, but it'd probably be like heart-shaped with a wee rainbow flag in it or something.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah, and it'd probably be really, really tasty. And, you know, they would have all these really arch heterosexual evangelical folk nipping out to taste it just to see what it's like. But that's completely aside the point. But the thing is, you know, she's doing some real pioneering work in the stuff that she's doing. But the thing is that she suffers as well. She gets a lot of abuse from inside, from people that just don't understand, that people that, you know, the Waldorfs and Stadlers of the church, you know, the folk that sit at the back and criticise, you know, and I think the thing is, for me, certainly my journey is that I've stopped complaining. I've stopped being the Waldorf and Stadler, and I'm going to do what I do, be who I am, and you know, regardless, I'll listen to people if they've got a genuine complaint, but if they're just spouting off because it's not the way that they do it, well, you know, to be honest, go and bother somebody else because you're no bothering me.
Let's just say too, you know, if our identity and our meaning and our worth is wrapped up in what people think of us, well, then we're going to be hit pretty hard from sometimes, and we're going to pat ourselves on the back at other times. But what we need to learn to do is for our identity and our meaning to not come from what any human being says or thinks about us, whether positive or negative, but to focus on and engage with the idea that the creator of the universe actually counted the hairs on my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually cares about me so deeply that he cares about even the little intricacies of my world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I had to live my life to please other people, first of all, I wouldn't have chosen this as a profession. There's no question in my mind. But second of all, I wouldn't have been able to make it through, man.
Yeah.
There's just too many people who are naysayers, and my own attitude is that of naysaying. You know, my default is to pick apart everything that everybody else is doing. And it's not a healthy place to be. But the reality is I do what I do so that I can make my father happy.
Yeah.
I want to live my life to make Jesus so that one day when I get to meet him face to face, he will embrace me and say, "Hey, good job.
Yes.
You lived for me." You know, I could care less in that way what other people say about me.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm tough and I'm always ready for a fight. So, bring anybody wants to, you better bring your A game. That's all I.
Bring it on, big man. Bring it on, as they say. Good for you. Good for you. Well, Pernell, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. There is one final thing I would just want to mention before I bring this podcast to a wrap, and that is your tattoos.
Yes.
I am extremely jealous of your tattoos. Unfortunately, my wife and children would not allow me to have full sleeves or things on my legs. You know, I think they're warming to maybe one or two, you know, on my arms, but, you know, my goodness, you have some absolutely beautiful tats. But the thing that makes it more beautiful, the story more beautiful, and that, and don't get me wrong, your tattoos are beautiful, but it's the way that you've become part of that tattoo community. The fact that you're shining Jesus in that tattoo community, that is, you know, you're going to tattoo conferences or conventions,
yeah.
And stuff like that. That really inspires me, man. You know, that again is another example of being, you know, being Jesus in the community and being in the context and being authentic. Because, you know, you'd be all fine and well going to, you know, trying to preach the gospel in a tattoo parlor, but if you're not tattooed and part of the community, you've got no authentic voice, you know?
Yeah. Like, again, I think it's the matter of take the things that you love and use every opportunity you can to be part of the kingdom and to announce the kingdom.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't just go get tattoos so that I can... so that I can have relationship with folks in the tattoo community or in tattoo shops and all that stuff. I happen to love tattoos anyway, and I hopefully use that as an opportunity to tell my story, you know, and to be part of the story that's happening there. So there's no question about it. But you would not believe how many people stop me in my tracks to talk about my tattoos. How many conversations have been started because of my Jesus tattoo on my lower arm? Like,
yeah.
I would not believe how many times I'm walking in the mall or on the street or I'm at the beach with my kids and people feel the need to come up and talk to me and start a conversation. It's incredible.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. And they look cool.
The only thing I'm thinking of is that, you know, coming back to the idea of creating models and people following you rather than using your imagination, I just imagine all the listeners of Something Beautiful podcast getting Jesus tattoos so that folk will come up to me. It's almost like those badges, you know, I'm such and such, ask me why, you know what I mean? But no, I think your Jesus tattoo is cool. And
are you suggesting that maybe tattoos become the new uniform? Because I might be able to get into that.
Hey, I think that would be awesome. That would be absolutely awesome. And do you know that, here's another thing, I don't know if you know this, I don't know if it was you that sent me a link, but do you know that there is a Facebook group called Salvationists with Tattoos?
No, I didn't know.
Something, it's literally the connection is Salvation Army with tattoos. And there's folk out there getting their essays, you know, saved to serve, getting their essays tattooed on their wrists.
Oh, yeah.
And you think, on one hand, I think, wow, that's so cool. On the other hand, I think, yeah. But at the end of the day, it's not about getting the tattoo to, as you say, it's about if tattoos are your thing, go and do it and be Jesus here. If knitting is your thing, go do it and be Jesus wherever you knit. You know, if making jam is your thing, well, go and do it with all your heart and be Jesus
And that's the point. Some of us have lived in another, it's almost like the Matrix. Some of us have lived in the bubble so long that we need to relearn how to be ourselves, that we need to learn who we are and what we're really about before we can actually do that. But it's exactly what you say. Whatever's your thing, go and learn it. And if you hear about a neighbor who's into something else, try it out. You never know. It might be something you like too, you know?
Yeah. The last time that happened, I started listening to progressive rock. And it's kind of been a bit of a downhill from there. Suddenly I think that if the song is in 28 minutes and it contains a 10-minute guitar solo, it just isn't quite music.
Yeah.
And that's just because I started listening to a friend's record collection, okay? So, I think there are limits to to that, or, but no, you're completely right. And Pernell, just to say, thank you, genuinely thank you for taking the time in between your busy schedule, because I believe you're off to a Christmas party in about 20 minutes time or something.
Yeah, I'm going to go do what I do really well, and that's eat a lot of food that somebody else has prepared.
Well, there you go. That's something I can get into too. So,
absolutely.
With that, I say thank you, Pernell. It's been an absolute pleasure. We will post... We'll post the podcast after Christmas. Who knows, you might even be in there between Christmas and New Year. And we'll post the podcast. We'll let you know about it so you can put it on your blog or tell your folks in Freeway that you're on the podcast. And we'll post all your various places on the web, and hopefully folk will connect with you. But they'll connect with you for the right reasons. That they'll see you.
I just feel like this is one more piece in the puzzle of total world domination for me, man.
you do have that kind of pinky in the brain kind of thing going on there, you know?
It's true, yeah. It's all part of the master plan, you know?
So, Pinky, will we take over the world? Yes, I can see that with you. I never knew that Pinky, the brain, was Canadian, but it now all makes sense.
Now it makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. Okay, dokie. Well,
thanks for having me on the podcast, and thanks for everybody who's been listening. I like to make friends, so I'm sure that Thomas will post my email address and website and all that stuff. So drop me a line and be pals.
Yeah, no, I'll make sure that they do. And I know for a fact that Johnny Laird will be having kittens with this podcast, because not only do you resonate with Johnny, and I resonate with Johnny Moll, but he's a good sort of friend that that you guys have got a good relationship to. And I think that I'll just leave you with the one thing, is the name Pernelton.
Yes.
Which was a fantastic nickname that we gave you.
Yes, absolutely. I call it a pet name. It's like Schnookums or Sweetie.
And Pernelton. So I'll leave you with that. My friend, it's been an absolute pleasure. So thank you. And you enjoy your party tonight. And I'll be in touch with regards to the podcast, okay?
Thanks, Thomas. Take care.
You too, pal. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so that was Pernell. That was me and Pernell. It seems a wee bit weird that I'm doing a rap about me. But then, isn't that what rapping is all about? Being so egotistical that you do raps about me. But there I go again, getting my rapping mixed up. If you want to contact us, if you want to give us a shout, if you want to complain about the fact that I'm wittering on like some insane lunatic, then please drop us an email at somethingbeautifulpodcast@gmail.com. Or if you're in America and have a phone, feel free to dial 972-535-8980. I think that's
I think that's the number. If you want to phone that nightline and, you know, witter on, then feel free. Or even if you want to give JD a call on Skype, it's JD Blundell, two L's at the end, at Skype. Give JD a call. And lastly, if you're on Twitter, then it's SB Podcast. Send us a wee tweet, follow us there, and you'll hear about all the other things that we're up to. So, anyway, without any more inane ramblings from me, I will bid you a good whatever. It's evening for me here in Motherwell, but if it's a good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or hey, even a good night, well, I wish you that. Thank you for listening. We really, really do appreciate it. God bless.
Been listening to Something Beautiful, part of the Emergent Podcast Network. For more information about this and other great shows, visit us online at www.emergentpodcast.com.
If you you have any questions or comments about this show, we do encourage you to drop us a line. You can email us, somethingbeautifulpodcast@gmail.com, or call our listener line, 972-535-8980, 972-535-8980, or anywhere in the world if you're on Skype, simply Skype J.D. Blundell, and you can find a link to that right on our podcast page at www.somethingbeautifulpodcast.com.
Thanks for listening to the Something Beautiful podcast. Join us again next week at somethingbeautifulpodcast.com.